Welcome to the sermon podcast of First Alliance Church in Lexington, Kentucky. The sermon you're about to hear, Unfinished Journeys, Stories, Mission, was preached by Tim Meyer, Vice President for Development for the Alliance, on Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 to 19, John chapter 4, and Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 to 20. It was recorded on November 8th, 2020.
Well, good morning, First Alliance Church. It's great to be with you. Thanks, Zach, for the invitation. It's so fun to see you in your place where you do ministry. Most of this stuff's over FaceTime or Zoom, so it's fun to be in the same place. And to Paul and the whole team, it really is an honor to be with you this morning. I'm also honored to follow Jeff Miller, who I love and admire and appreciate so much, last Sunday. So if you were here, we're sort of bookending this unfinished theme, and he talked about some regional stuff, and today we're going to look a little bit more at a global focus. And I'll reiterate one of the things that he said last week, which is a big thank you to this church for faithfulness over a long period of time. So this church over 65 years has sent out a ton of people, has given a lot of money, has prayed a lot of prayers, and a lot of the stories that have come out of those sacrifices or those engagements, you don't know about. You know, you don't always know about the prayer that you pray for the person who leads somebody else to Christ, who disciples somebody else, and a church is born, or exactly where that dollar went, but it matters, and this church has been faithful for a lot of years. So I just want to say thank you. Sometimes when I go into places, it's like the first time the church has thought about being outward focused or thinking about the world, and that's not true here. So thank you to Zach and to the whole team for the way you've organized this weekend. We had a great time last night praying for workers and hearing their stories, and so it's ongoing. It's also not lost on me that this week was a little bit of a newsy week. Yesterday, I was on the plane while things were breaking, and all the news is breaking. And I just want to acknowledge that maybe that in God's sovereign timing, your church decided to do a missions week in the middle of a very significant week for our country, and I think that's a gift. Because most of us have had our energy, our emotions, our minds consumed by things that are important, but that might not be primary for us as Christians. Because no matter what happens around the world, this year, 2020, is not a lost year. In fact, 2020, for some, will be the year that they encounter Jesus for the very first time. And for them, this year is the best year that they've ever had. This year, churches will be planted. Jesus, like my friend Rob says, has never been nervous a day in his life, and he didn't start in 2020. He's not going, oh no, if we can just get through this year, then we'll see. Oh, I don't know about this election, then we'll see. There's been a lot of elections, friends, and a lot of kings and kingdoms and rulers and all this kind of stuff. I want to remind us this morning that our primary citizenship, according to Paul, is in heaven. And that no matter what happens around us, we declare, like we have over and over this morning already, Jesus is Lord. And that he is in charge. And that these things matter around us. He's not disconnected from the things around us. But he's actually causing us and asking us that our eyes go somewhere else. So what I'd like to do just for a few minutes this morning is maybe take off the Facebook lenses and the evening news lenses and all the stuff that is blowing up around us and put on some gospel lenses and say, okay, if our primary citizenship is in heaven and our primary responsibility as Christians is to follow Jesus with our whole hearts and then love our neighbors as ourselves, what does that mean? And what would he call us into? I want to acknowledge one last thing and then we'll jump in, is this year has been challenging. So thinking about other people around the world who haven't heard the gospel is like not always on the top of our priority list. You know, it's been challenging. My kids are in school, out of school, in school, you know, and it's like, and we all have personal challenges going on even in this room beyond COVID and everything else. But when God changes our hearts and changes our vision, he can birth something unique and amazing, even in the strangest of circumstances. And the story that you're currently experiencing is not the end of the story. So whatever God's doing. He's writing. He's on the move, and now he's asking us to join him. I want to think about three brief encounters this morning that Jesus had with people that I think give us a template and maybe even a posture to respond to him and his heart for people around us and around the world. I'm going to be honest, I'm going to talk about the Christian Missionary Alliance at the end and how you can participate, because I have the joy and privilege of, you know, speaking on behalf of our 700 workers around the world, and I'm excited about that missionary activity that you've seen even as a representation this morning. But I think it's helpful to maybe start with this encounter that brings our own lives into view, and it's with Peter. We're going to look at three unfinished things: unfinished journeys, unfinished stories, unfinished mission. Peter's journey, and the reason we start there, is it gives us a lot of hope for ourselves. Peter is so flawed. And so I don't know this morning if you looked in the mirror and went, man, I am awesome. But I don't feel that way. So if you feel like, man, I made it to church again, that was good. That's good that I made it to church. Then that's where we're at. You know, and so many times there's just challenges around us, and we see ourselves in Peter. When Peter first meets Jesus, you remember that he's willing to just leave his career behind. He jumps out of the boat. He takes his brother. He drops the nets. He's following Jesus, and he's ready to go at every moment. He jumps out of the boat, tries to walk on water. He sinks, and Jesus pulls him back out. But all, you know, he's got a lot of passion, this guy. But his heart is what I love. And I love the outcome of his story, but I want to give you a snapshot of his journey that maybe we see ourselves in. And it's found in Matthew chapter 16, in verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do the people say the Son of Man is?" This is an important question maybe for us as well. They replied, "The Son of Man is," now you can fill in a modern day blank, but some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, still others Jeremiah, one of the prophets. And then he looks at him in the eyes and he says, "So what about you? Who do you say I am?" Okay, we hear about all the rest of the people. What about you? And Peter speaks up on behalf of the disciples, which he's known to do, and he goes, "Actually, you're the Messiah. You're the promised one. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. And the gates of hell will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." And Peter gets it right in the moment. Jesus asks them point blank, "I hear what everybody else is saying about the Son of Man, who is the promised one. Who's the most important one? Who's the one whose kingdom is to come?" And they go, "Well, some people are saying it's John the Baptist. Some people are saying it's Elijah." And he says, "Well, what about you?" And I feel that question again today. "So what about you? I don't care what everybody else says. What about you? Are you going to follow me or not?" And Peter steps up and he goes, "You're the Messiah." And Jesus makes this bold statement, "Peter, you're so right that on this confession, we're going to build the whole church. And actually, your name is Peter now, and you're sort of the rock that we're going to build this on." And he does. He becomes the leader of the church in Jerusalem. But like many of us, three verses later, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord, this won't happen to you," after Jesus predicts his own death. And Jesus turns and says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." So again, I don't know how your day is going, but the chances of you being called Satan so far today are slim, I hope. Unless you're really struggling at home. So, most of us don't get called Satan regularly. Look at Peter's life. It's crazy. He, on the one hand, he gets it so right that Jesus says, "I'm going to build my church on this confession." And then three verses later, he goes, "You're Satan, get behind me." Because Peter's all mixed up in his priorities. He's all mixed up in his own place in the kingdom. But you know what I love about Peter? He keeps saying yes. Even after, on the most important night of history, he denies that he even knows Jesus. on the night of the crucifixion, he denies that he even knows him. He says yes to him again on that beach in John 21 when Jesus says, "So, do you love me or not?" Okay, and he gives him his chance of restoration, and he says, "Go feed and take care of my people." Friends, the reason we start here is because the first posture in being effective in responding to God's mission is really to be open-handed with our own lives and our own journeys, to say, "God, whatever you have for me, I'm going to keep saying yes." It's a willingness to let Jesus in, to go deep inside of us. There's no way that we'll be able to sustain any kind of missional activity or energy unless we are first transformed by Jesus himself. It's like a well that's cultivated when we drill down and then finally we get there and it springs out in power. And that's Jesus' intention for us. But without the power of the Holy Spirit and his transforming work in our lives, we are not going to care about people around the world, number one. It's not even going to cross our minds. We're going to rarely care about people in our own city. And frankly, it's hard to even keep our eye on the ball as citizens of the kingdom unless we continue to say to Jesus, okay, I'll follow you. When we were first on our missionary journey, my wife and I, we've been married 18 years now. This is 6 years in. We moved to France and we're going to do this great thing for God. And it wasn't going well. And our ministry was falling apart, and Rachel had just had a third miscarriage that was far along, and it was very difficult. And we were kind of all alone because the people had been transitioned, and we were sitting in this tiny apartment, and I was feeling super sorry for myself, just going, you know, why did I do this? It was fine at the church that I was at. We'll just go back. And Rachel, who herself was going through this deep struggle, looked at me and was like, you know, you talk a good game about, yeah, we're going to go do this for God, but now we're in it. This is it. We're doing it now. And it's not going our way. So are we going to follow Jesus, or are we going to follow what's going on around us? And God was hounding me with that verse from Philippians 1, for me to live as Christ and to die as gain, because I was going, I'm not sure if I really want to make my whole life about you, Jesus, even though I had already left to be a missionary. Because that's the journey we're all on. But by God's grace, we were able to continue to say yes. And there's little gifts here and there. He took us to Paris and people came to faith and there were cool stories. But that part of the story, the rah-rah part, usually comes on the back of suffering and challenge and difficulty and disappointment. And that's where it's birthed in us, that willingness to say, all right, fine, you take everything from me, I'll still follow you. And then something amazing happens when we say yes. The second encounter I want us to think about is Jesus and the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4. I'm not going to read this passage, but very briefly, most of you are familiar with this passage. Jesus goes out in the middle of the day, sees a Samaritan woman who is an outcast, who is on her fifth husband, who is ethnically different from Jesus, is a different gender than Jesus, and all those kind of things. And he approaches her. He initiates conversation with her. He sees her. She feels so seen at the end of it that she, and convicted, frankly, that she goes and tells everybody, you got to meet this guy. Like, he told me everything about myself. I never even know him. And she becomes this little evangelist in the region for what Jesus is doing. The disciples were skeptical. The Samaritans were opposed to the Jews and vice versa. Jesus crosses all the lines at risk of people saying things about him because he saw the world and people differently. One of the great patterns of missional effectiveness for Jesus that we pick up in the Gospels is that he sees over and over and over. It says he saw the people and he had compassion on them. He sees the blind man. He sees people who are lost. He said they're lost without a shepherd. We've got to reach them. And the disciples usually are like, that's not what we should be doing. They're usually like, I think your priority is out of line. Because seeing is costly. Seeing creates responsibility. If you actually see someone, then you have to make the decision, okay, I'm going to engage or not. The second posture in being effective, both as a missionary church and as we respond to God, is really that posture of willingness to make our lives be about other people as well, not just ourselves. So while we're asking God to transform our lives, we're also taking a step towards seeing people around us as Jesus would see them. Right now, all the messaging that we hear is hate other people who disagree with you. And Jesus' message is see other people and love them as yourself. And then see where that takes it. Because it takes you to weird places where it feels illogical. The mission of God doesn't always make logical sense on paper, because everything in us is about self-protection, comfort, building for ourselves, and an open-handedness to see other people involves a life of hospitality. That's what we see in Jesus with the Samaritan woman. He's actually creating a life of hospitality just on the move. He's not just welcoming her in, he's welcoming himself into her life, which is sometimes harder. It's harder to be welcomed into someone else's table sometimes than it is to welcome them to ours, because we're not in control. This is an unfinished story, and that's complicated because you can't fast forward the ending. It's just kind of like going. And you're just joining people and saying, well, this is God's mission, it's not mine. I think most of you are aware that this church is a part of the Christian Missionary Alliance. That's the First Alliance Church. And as a part of a global movement with 22,000 churches around the world, we also send 700 workers from the U.S. Who are out there in difficult places. I'm going to show you where the majority of them live in just a second. Those workers are in places, with Kama and Envision and Access, doing primarily church planting and marketplace ministries. And all of those workers unite around this unfinished mission of God, but are engaging in stories that are really the long play. Most of the stories that we hear and that we're encouraging are not quick hit, like they show up in a village and 1,000 people come to Christ. Every once in a while that happens. But so much of the last remaining places that we're going are long play places, difficult places, where somebody comes to faith and then you got to walk with them for a long time and disciple them, because maybe they're the first person to come to faith and they're experiencing incredible resistance from their own family. This year in 2020, a church planting sort of renewal has happened in Cambodia. A guy whose eye fell out of his head literally in this accident like 12 months ago asked his wife, who had become a believer, take me to your pastor. They prayed for him. The eye went back in. He got healed. He became an evangelist. This all happened the last year. He's gone around. You can find this video online. It's, I forget what the name of it. It's Out of Shadows or something. Anyway, Zach will post it. So you can hear from him. You can actually see him on the, we just released a video 3 months ago. And he's going village to village and introducing all these people to faith. And all these people are coming to faith. But the reason that's an unfinished story is he himself is still being developed as a leader. Now you got to disciple all these people. You got to get them scripture. You've got to train up leaders. And so the journey is long and it is of great cost. To see others is not just costly to our time, but to join in the mission of God is costly to these workers, costly to their families, to their life plans. Frankly, it's financially costly to do this. Without churches like this one and many others around this country, we wouldn't be able to obey the command that Jesus gives us. So it's unfinished, but it's worth journeying through. And the third encounter this morning is that one that's familiar, and the passage was read in a bunch of languages, beautifully done. Thanks for organizing that video. It's the Great Commission. In Matthew 28, Jesus takes the disciples up on the mountain. And as they're going up on the mountain, I'm just going to read into this and speculate a little bit. I think that maybe the disciples, after Jesus has been crucified and risen again, are now thinking, all right, Peter was right, he is the Messiah. And what does Messiah mean? Messiah means military victory, we're going to rebel against Rome. And as they're going up on the mountain, I think that maybe some of them think, finally. We went through all this weirdness, we thought it was over, now it's back on. But now we get to go down, because as they go up on the mountain, good things happen on mountains. Big stories happen on mountains for heroes that they've heard about for many years. So Jesus gets up on the mountain with them. It says as they're walking up, some doubted. And again, this is good. You know, we just sang that, like, you're not overwhelmed by my doubts and fears. Even some who see the resurrected Christ doubt. So we're going to be okay, right? Those of us who are conflicted at times. But Jesus says, go. And right when they hear go, they're like, great, here we go. Go where, kill who? And Jesus says, go make disciples of all peoples, not just geopolitical nations, but all people groups, teaching them, baptizing them, and I'll be with you until the end of the age. And what Jesus does is flip the script completely on them and say, instead of going and killing, I want you to go and die. Literally, most of the guys that were standing up on that mountain with Jesus would give their lives for the cause of the kingdom. It was great cost to them. But Jesus said, go and make disciples, and here's the unfinished mission of the church. We're still living it out. We're still under this command. And as Jeff reminded you last week, this is both regional, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria. But it's not an or statement, it's an and statement. So if we're going to do this together, you can only do this in partnership. And as we fulfill that final command of Jesus to go to the ends of the earth, all nations, we do it together. And here's why. Can we put up these slides? We'll come back to that posture in just a second. This is the reality. Some of you saw this when Tim Crouch was here last year doing the Alliance World Tour, that not everybody has equal access to the gospel. There are 3.4 billion people who remain unreached around the world. Why do we care? Because Jesus cares. And when we align ourselves with Jesus, we do Jesus things, which is pray and give and go. But more than 4,000 people groups have little or no opportunity to know Jesus. If you take this stripe of no access, keep going through it, and you put it on a map, this is where those people live. That's not a surprise to most of us. But this might be. The next slide shows you where our workers live. 80% of Alliance International workers live in that area where the last reached and the least reached live. That is not an easy place to live and do ministry. It's not easy. And it requires great sacrifice and great commitment. But the interesting thing is that most missions, current stats, are around 20 to 30% that live in this area. We've actually doubled down on the strategy to go, even when the fruit is slow, even when it's hard to report quick stories, we're going to do this because this is the place that Jesus is calling us to go, to make disciples of all nations. And in Matthew 24, he says, that's when the end will come. This is only possible when we reorient, you can go back to the posture slide, sorry, ourselves around God's mission. When we reorient the priorities of our lives, of the way we give our finances and the way we release our children and the way we go ourselves and the way we spend time praying, this is only possible, this kind of obedience in partnership. I want to tell you one last story and then give you an invitation and challenge. This is a story that, again, you'll be able to access a video here pretty shortly. If it's not online already, I should have checked with the team. It's a story about a Syrian woman that we'll call Rima. Rima first encountered Jesus through some Christians that she met. She grew up Muslim and encountered Jesus and initially gave her heart and her mind to Jesus in Syria. Because of the war, as most of you know, many people were on the move around the world, and she was one of them. She was displaced as a refugee, ended up in Egypt. In Egypt, she met some more Christians who took her to a Bible study and taught her a little bit more about who God was. Again, her family was displaced. She ended up in another North African country, which, by the way, the previous video showed somebody who lives there currently that you guys know. And she met one of our Marketplace Ministries worker who was running a cooking class and business there. Our worker realized that she was early in her faith journey but started discipling her. She was deeply struggling with anxiety and depression. Our worker one night had a dream, and she dreamt that she was in a prison, and she went down into this prison, and all the cells were filled up with Syrian women. And one by one, she took a key and unlocked the cells to let the women come out and be freed. And she walked out of the prison, woke up, and thought, well, this is a sign from God that I need to continue the journey with Rima, I wasn't sent here to work with Syrians, but maybe this is just a good reminder. A few days later, Rima said, hey, you know I've been struggling with anxiety and depression and all these things. But the other night, I had the first peaceful night of sleep that I've had in a long time. I had this dream first that I was down in this prison cell and that somebody, and I think it might have been you, like came down the stairs and unlocked the prison cell. And as they shared the details of the dream, it was the same prison down to like the paint on the walls. Our worker said, Rima, I'm not the one who unlocks the prison, Jesus is, but he can set you free. And Rima took another step towards Jesus. Well, shortly after that, she got refugee status in Canada. She wrote back to our worker and said, hey, have you ever heard of the Christian and Missionary Alliance? So our worker was like, yeah, because of course she can't share openly in that place who she works with or whatever. And she said, yeah, actually, that's my home church in the States. And she said, well, cool, that's the church that has given me refugee status in Canada. And she said, does every one of the Alliance churches have that same symbol on it? You know, that cross and crown and all that. And our worker said, yeah, that's our logo, CNMA logo. And she said, well, that's funny, because that was the logo on the building in Syria where I first heard about Jesus. And that was the logo on the little pamphlet stuff in Egypt where they taught me about the Bible. And now I know you represent the logo and I'm here. And I want to tell you, friends, nobody told each other that Rima was coming. It was just kind of people showing up and being present in her life. She also said to our worker, hey, was the guy who started this CNMA thing some old guy with a big beard in the 1800s? And she said, yeah, his name was A.B. Simpson, you know. She goes, man, I had a vision of this guy recently, that he was praying that like arrows of light, the gospel would go out all over the world, even to Damascus. I feel like that guy was praying for me. Our archives team did some work recently, and we actually found a prayer of Simpson's from 1883 or something that was almost word for word what she recounted to the worker. Those kind of stories are both God's stories. He's the one that knits it all together. But they're also obedience stories. Because somebody has to show up and share the gospel in Syria. Somebody has to be willing to teach the Bible in Egypt. Somebody has to be willing to leave their comfort and go. So I want to talk to a couple groups of people and then we're done. This morning, God might be stirring in some of your hearts to say, I actually want to be one of those 700. We've sent out 100 new workers in the last 18 to 24 months. We've had some retire, some have to leave the field. Those 100 new workers have been raised up in moments like this where you go, I'm not so sure. That could start with an internship. It could start. So if you're young or maybe you're considering a second career, you have action steps on that pamphlet. I don't want to hesitate to call you to go, because we got to go or else the gospel gap doesn't shrink. People have to carry the message. That's the way it happens. For all of us in the room, I want to encourage you and challenge you that because these are spiritual battles, to pray differently. For these workers, to pray that God will raise up more, that God will break atmospheres in these countries, that God will do something different in this own, you know, in your own city. And I want to be very bold and say, this costs a lot of money to do. It's of great cost to send all these workers. This year, we're going to have to raise between all of our 2,000 churches and donors about $60 million to do this, and it's worth every penny. Why? Because we spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on a bunch of other things. And I spend a lot of money on coffee and other things that I could always have another 5, another 10 to give. But I want to call out bold generosity, kingdom generosity. When you're having an offering the Here, There, and Everywhere in a couple of weeks, this church could double what you did last year. I know that because almost every church can. God has blessed us to bless the nations. That doesn't make anybody rich. Trust me, these missionaries are not getting rich. But the kingdom can advance beyond. If we will be open-handed and say, God, will you reorient my life around your mission? Worship team, will you come? We'll have a time of response. We'll ask Zach to come. But I just want to pray a blessing and an encouragement to you. I'm happy to talk. Anybody is happy to talk. If God's stirring in your heart to say, man, I want to be one of those ones that goes. I don't know what that means, but I'll take a step. But for everybody here today, I know that with a big election and all these other things going on, maybe the last thing you thought about coming in today was like, what's my next step in mission? But maybe God in his grace is going, hey, I've opened a door for you. Will you say yes? God, will you bless my new friends here at First Alliance Church in Lexington, Kentucky, that has been a faithful church to the Word, a faithful church to their neighbors, a faithful church to the world. Would you stir up and increase more heart for the lost, both in this community and around the world, more surrender to you, more generosity in the way we even send our children out, which sometimes could be a much harder ask than anything else we're thinking about. But as we let go of the things we hold tight to, we follow you into a faithful, joy-filled journey. And we're thankful that you're with us always, even until the end. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening. Here at First Alliance Church, we love God, love others, and live fully engaged in Christ's Great Commission starting in Lexington, Kentucky. To learn more about our church or to hear other sermons like this one, visit us at faclex.com.